Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of Mohini, told the demons, O sons of Kashyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman. Purport. Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moral instructor, said, Vishvaso naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. Never put your faith in a woman or a politician. Thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was pretending to be a woman, warned the demons against putting so much faith in her, for she had appeared as an attractive woman, ultimately to cheat them, indirectly disclosing the purpose for which she had appeared before them. She said to the sons of Kashyapa, How is this? You were all born of a great rishi, yet you are putting your faith in a woman who is loitering here and there like a prostitute, unprotected by father or husband. Women in general should not be trusted, and what to speak of a woman loitering like a prostitute? The word kamini is significant in this connection. Women, especially beautiful young women, invoke the dormant lusty desires of a man. Therefore, according to Manu Sangita, every woman should be protected, either by her husband, by her father, or by her grown sons. Without such protection, a woman will be exploited. Indeed, women like to be exploited by men. As soon as a woman is exploited by a man, she becomes a common prostitute. This is explained by Mohini Murti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Katankasyapadayada Pungschalyamai Sangataha Vishvasam Pandito Jatu Kaminishu Nayatihi. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of Mohini Murti, told the demons, O sons of Kashyapa Muni, I am only a prostitute. How is it that you have so much faith in me? A learned person never puts his faith in a woman. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So with your permission, please give me your blessing so that I can say something useful. Hare Krishna. Yeah, this is a real loaded purport, isn't it? Prabhupada accepted Chanakya Pandit as a moral authority. Didn't accept him as a spiritual authority. We don't offer Guru Puja to Chanakya Pandit. But because he accepted Chanakya Pandit as a moral authority, and he quotes him in purports, then we should accept those statements as authoritative. Now, we may ask the question, if you ask the question, how is it true? That is, it's called philosophical speculation. If you ask, is it true? That's mental speculation. So Srila Prabhupada taught us that we should by all means be philosophical in our speculation, but we shouldn't be mental speculators. Now, these statements about women, saying you cannot trust a woman, of course, especially in modern culture, these are very inflammatory statements. Unfortunately, some people, they don't take to spiritual life in ISKCON because they're put off by these statements, and there's things we can do about that. Maybe we'll discuss these things, but we shouldn't try and explain the statements away altogether. I've heard one devotee say that Chanakya Pandit didn't have a nice marriage, therefore some of his statements are influenced as such. Now, I don't know what the marriage status of Chanakya Pandit was, but regardless of what Chanakya Pandit said, the fact still remains that Srila Prabhupada accepted him as an authority. And some people try and explain that in another way as well. They say that Prabhupada was influenced by Victorian culture. There's also a problem with that as well, because, well, as today's verse points out, this is Mohini Murti speaking. So we can't really say Mohini Murti was influenced by some material culture, because Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, there are statements, if we want to look at it as try not to disturb people, then there are other statements Prabhupada makes. He says, for example, well, in the teachings of Queen Kunti, there's one verse, Tata paramahansanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vidanartam katam pasye mahi striyaha. Queen Kunti says, she's praying to the Lord, you come to teach bhakti yoga to the paramahansas and the mental speculators. How then can we, woman, understand you? And this is Kunti speaking. Now this is, if we think about this verse, it's quite sublime. Because in the 12th canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam is described, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahansyam. It's the perfect literature, it's the pure Purana, and it's for the Paramahansas. So the Paramahansas, they worship Srimad Bhagavatam, they regularly study it. They accept the teachings of Queen Kunti as their instruction. She is their Shiksha Guru. And therefore it is interesting that she is saying, you have come to teach Bhakti Yoga to the Paramahansas, but how can we women understand? See, the Vedic culture is very sublime, and the ego, now this is it's very much a modern creation. The ego between the male and female classes is very prominent in the Western culture. Therefore, to take a lower position is unacceptable. So women from a modern culture might think what Kunti said is not right. She's betrayed the woman as a class. She's saying, how can we women understand you? So in modern culture, the mood is more like, no, you should stand up for yourself. You should. Now, this is not such a bad thing. The feminist movement has come about in part due to exploitation by men. If men are not worthy objects of worship, or if they do not provide shelter for women, then how is it possible for a woman to be subservient, right? It's not a one-sided thing. Some people, they like to blame women for not being submissive. But actually, that's a reaction to lack of good behavior on the part of men. Prabhupada said, he was discussing the feminist movement, he said it was actually created by men in order to exploit women. The purport explaining this, that when women are given shelter by their fathers, their husbands, or their sons in later life, then because they're sheltered, they're not exploited. But if you can break up the family unit, the extended family, then women can then be exploited. So then this is what we see in modern culture, where women are treated as sex objects. So that although the motive of women's liberation in many ways is good, women should be respected, we see the opposite happening, that they become then exploited and used as sex objects. Material energy is not so simple that you can try and change the culture like that. So, yeah, that's as I say, that we cannot put those statements down to culture only. They're coming from bona fide sources. Now, in the case of Kunti, we see the lovely situation. She's completely respected, and she's acknowledged as spiritual authority. One time, some Prabhupada disciples, they asked Prabhupada, is it true that you said women are less intelligent? And Prabhupada answered, if you see yourself as a woman, then yes. So his point was, transcend it. And we see, for example, Kunti is a great example. She's not on a trip. She doesn't mind taking a lower position. In the 11th canto, it is said, Kim badram, kim abadram va, dvaitasya vastuna kiyat. Where is the question of good and bad in this material world? So the culture, Vedic culture, they don't put so much stress on material position. So it's fine to be in a position of subservience. It is not a bad thing, because ultimately it's illusion. Kim badram, kim abadram. What is good and bad? It's like if you have a play, you may play the servant or you may play the king, but it doesn't matter because it's only a play. So in the Vedic culture, they're more otherworldly in their view. Now, I noticed this when I used to live in Bengal just for a few years. There was one cleaner in the school. So when she was 13, her husband died. So she just, that was it. She was a widow for the rest of her life. She didn't consider getting remarried. And I was thinking, she's on another plane of existence. I couldn't conceive of this. I was thinking, you know, I couldn't renounce like she has renounced. See the qualities. The qualities are there. And we see this in the Vedic culture. The women, they're very elevated in their character and in their qualities. For example, you know, when the husband dies, then the woman will climb on top of the funeral pyre, sati rite. And then, of course, we see as Kali Yuga took hold, then this attitude changed, and then there was this bad habit of forcing women to enter the funeral pyre. And then the British correctly outlawed it, because it wasn't meant to be done like that. You shouldn't follow the rules if you don't want to. Just discussing more about Prabhupada. So when he came to the West, sometimes he would make statements to the media. They would challenge him on his position on women. And as some disciples pointed out, he was a PR nightmare, Srila Prabhupada. He didn't give the right answer that they were wanting. But if you reflect upon this, there is no right answer when you think about Prabhupada's position. He was coming from Bengali culture, and he was being criticized for giving freedom to women. And then he comes to the Western culture, and he gets criticized for not giving women enough freedom. So if you're going to play the culture game, what's the right thing to say? The answer is there's no right answer, right? You can look at Prabhupada as he was a great proponent of women's rights. He gave women the right to practice Bhakti Yoga outside of the traditional cultural norms of Bengal, and he was criticized in Bengal for doing so, right? So he's actually, what is real woman's liberation? Liberation, muktir hitvanyata rupam, svarupena vyavastiti. Real liberation means realizing one's real identity, one's real nature as eternal servant of Krishna. So by doing so, by giving this opportunity and adjusting traditional cultural norms in order to give the best opportunity for everyone, then Srila Prabhupada can be seen in that light. He's not at all conservative from that perspective. And ultimately, in Prabhupada's position, he wasn't trying to play off cultures against each other. He's trying to give the absolute truth, and he presented it as such. And if people didn't like it, that was unfortunate. Like we have the statement in Krishna. Krishna says it, Striyo Vaishyastata Sudra Te Piyanti Param Gatim. It says even Vaishyas, Sudras and women can attain Krishna if they take shelter. So what is the implication of this verse? Placing women as a class that are lower than Vaishyas, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. And what should our position be? Now it says Kalau Sudra Sambhava. In Kali Yuga, everyone is a Sudra. So my approach, I have to be honest and say, well, I'm lower than Sudra. We're all coming from what's described in the seventh canto as Anchaja, class outside of Varnashram. So practically speaking, we see, I mean, today's verse is just saying, you cannot put faith in a woman. I would reply, in my experience of life in the United Kingdom, I don't see any difference between men and women in terms of how trustworthy they are. Everyone's got their own experience, but I don't see any difference. So I consider that to be, well, that's an indication that men are also untrustworthy. It's very much so in this culture because the culture's lost. And what is a Vaishya, a Kshatriya, a Brahmana in Vedic culture? What are these qualities? We don't see so much. Now in ISKCON, we take initiation, we become Brahmanas. But if we look at our sangskaras, what's inside our heart, we're not really imbibing the culture as such, we don't really have these qualities. It takes more work to actually develop real qualities. As I was saying before, I mean, the women of the Vedic culture, they can give up their bodies out of devotion for their husbands. So who can give up their body for some higher cause in Kali Yuga? Would you want to? I mean, under what circumstances could you bring yourself to enter the fire as such? So we see it's probably safe. Well, it's true to say that we're actually subculture. We don't have any culture. Therefore, coming from that standpoint, it's dangerous for men to take the higher position and say, well, scriptures say you're a woman, therefore you're less intelligent. Because we should judge by qualities. I mean, the whole Varna Ashram system, that is what it's based on, isn't it? It's not about you must follow the Varna regardless. It's about this Varna is suitable for you, therefore you follow it. So, as Narad Muni says, Yasya yal lakshanam proktam varnash rama bivanjakam yadanyatrapi drishyata tatti naiva vidirdishet. He says, whatever qualities you see in a person, you should judge them by those qualities, not by their birth in the family that they come in. So one can pick a brahmana from a shudra background, like Satyakama. He went to Gautama Muni for instruction. And Gautama Muni said, what varna are you? So he asked his mother. His mother, who was a prostitute, said, I don't know who your father is. So he went back to Gautama Rishi and said, I don't know who my father is. So Gautama Rishi accepted him and said, you're a brahmana because you're honest. So he gave him instruction. Now the scriptures are full of such examples. Now in the case of woman, the woman is the varna, well it's called Stri Dharma. They have a certain set of duties. But then the question may be brought up, what do you do when a woman, due to her cultural conditioning, due to her nature, does not want to follow the Stri Dharma, the duties of a woman? Now Prabhupada is very clear, women should be to take shelter, serve their husbands. But we see a lot in women that they are very, some of them are very intelligent, they are educated, and they're career minded. What do you do? What do you say to such women? Actually, one Prabhupada one just made a statement. He said, you know, women, they can have PhDs, they can teach in universities. A lot of the time he would say other things. He would say, women, they should be taught to sweep and to cook. Women will be happy if they learn how to serve their husbands. But we see other times he said the opposite. So what do you do in practice? It's an interesting question. Sometimes devotees, they don't appreciate when there are a lot of intelligent women in ISKCON who travel around like sannyasis and they give classes and they're very inspiring. But then there's a sector of the society, they don't like this. They say this is undermining the role of women. Srila Prabhupada, I'll give you one example. It's in one of the Prabhupada memories. I don't remember the name of this Mataji, but she was giving classes a lot. And then some temple authority decided that women should no longer give class. So she wrote to Prabhupada and asked if it was okay for her to give class. Prabhupada's answer was, you're married and your husband is a brahmana, therefore you're assisting him, therefore you can give class. She wasn't given the letter. The authority put the letter in the bin and didn't tell her, but just by chance she happened to notice the letter in the bin. So this is the dark period of ISKCON where there was a bit of, women were being pushed down, and Prabhupada was not, he was giving opportunities. And I mean, as I said, the whole principle of Varna Ashram is, if the point of a Varna is its shelter, it's supposed to be a comfortable situation. If your conditioning does not allow you to fit well into that Varna, then it's no longer your Varna, is it? So I would argue that in the modern society especially, there are a lot of women who are very qualified to practice Bhakti Yoga, but are not able to adopt a traditional submissive role as a wife. And such women should be given facility to practice Bhakti Yoga outside of Varna Ashram, because ultimately Varna Ashram is there to serve the conditioned needs. And if one practices Bhakti Yoga, then there's no need for one to have a particular Varna or a particular Ashram. Varna Ashram system is there to support Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga can be practiced outside of Varna Ashram. That's my particular take on this if you're interested. I mean, I consider myself to be strict on philosophy, but in application, I consider myself to be quite liberal. I don't like it when people try to philosophically undermine these statements. There's another one in the first canto. Stri Shudra Dvijabandhanam Tri Na Shruti Gochara. It says, women, Shudras, and friends of the twice born, they cannot understand the Vedas. But actually, the verse goes on to explain, therefore, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Mahabharata. So this is an interesting text because it gives the reason why women are considered less intelligent, because they cannot understand the Vedas. Now, who here can understand the Vedas? From what I've heard, the Sanskrit language of the Vedas is very difficult, requires a lot of training, and it's a lot easier to read the Mahabharata than to read the Vedas in terms of understanding the deeper meaning in terms of Sanskrit grammar. So then the question then arises, well, who can understand the Mahabharata? This verse is saying that women can understand the Mahabharata. So to what level do they understand it? And to what level can we understand it? To what level can devotees currently understand the Mahabharata? I mean, the Mahabharata is said to be full of sequences of Vedic Dharma. Now, if you've ever tried to understand, when you think about Dharma, it gets very complicated very quickly. I mean, as far as Dharma goes, I can understand Sarva Dharma Parichaya, give up all Dharma and surrender to Krishna. And I can't really go too far beyond that. It gets complicated. In the Mahabharata, like you've got, for example, Bhishma teaching Yudhisthira Dharma. It's very elevated stuff. So the question arises, and I don't actually know the answer to this question, when it says the woman can understand the Mahabharata, does that mean they can understand these intricacies of Dharma in ways that we can't, in which case they're more intelligent? Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Shishi Siddha Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai. Yeah, I mean, it's open for discussion. Anyway, I'm not going to keep talking about this topic. Let's talk about the words used. The words used are quite interesting because in this verse, the term pumschali, and I'm given the root word, I'm not given it's kamanishu, which means kamani. Kamani means, these terms are described in the fifth canto. Kamani means lusty. Pumschali means easily subdued. And in the next verse, which is coming up, will be on Monday, the term used is svairini, which means, it means independent. It also means, it's described as a woman who will marry within her own group. Now, in the fifth canto, there's a description of these three types of women. And it's in connection with Bilasvarga. Bilasvarga means the subterranean heavenly planets. There's Bhaumasvarga. Now, we're living in Jambudweep, and we live in Bharatvarsha, which is one of the nine islands of Jambudweep. It's said that the other eight islands of Jambudweep are heavenly planets. They're called Bhaumasvarga, which means the earthly heavenly planets. Now, below us, we have Bilasvarga, which is seven heavenly planets. That's Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, and Patala. And then above, we have Divyasvarga, which means the celestial heavenly planets. Now, in the fifth canto, there's a statement, Bilasvargeshu svargad apyadika kamabhogaishvaryananda bhuti vibhutibihi, which means Bilasvarga is superior to Svarga in terms of enjoyment, influence, and wealth. In other words, the greatest enjoyment, you won't find it in Divyasvarga, you'll find it in Bilasvarga, the subterranean heavenly planets. Now the first planet, if we go down, the first planet is called Atala. So Atala is described as follows. There are three types of women: the Kamani, the Svairani, and the Pumschali. Now the Pumschali, as I mentioned, they are easily subdued. They don't like to stick to one husband. They like to have one husband after another, after another. The Kamani, they will marry a husband from any group. And the Svairani, they will marry a husband only from their own group. So it's described that what they do is they capture men and they feed them cannabis, which makes them very strong. And I consider this, you know, Richard Dawkins, he has this, the God delusion, right? When they take this cannabis, they become deluded into thinking they're God. So for me, that is what is actually meant by the God delusion. Actually, we're all deluded into thinking we're God. Ishvaro Hum Humbogi. The Bhagavad Gita says, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. We all have this mentality, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So that is a delusion. We're all thinking we're God. But this mood, it becomes even more intense in Bilasvarga, in Atala. So the woman, they feed cannabis to these men, they capture them, and then they enjoy. And the man, he's thinking he's God, and he has the prowess of thousands of elephants, and the woman, they enjoy to their full satisfaction. And this is the heavenly planets. If you find this attractive, then it's material conditioning. It's quite difficult. Some of the statements in the Bhagavatam are quite attractive. There's a lot of statements about beautiful woman. How do we look at those statements? Well, we should understand that the Bhagavatam is purifying. It's like in the 10th canto, it is said, Vikriditam vrajavadubir idam chavishno shradanvito nusunaya dataverna yedyaha. Bhaktim pram bhagavati parilabhya kamam hridrogam ashvapahi notchachirena dhiraha. It said that if one reads the pastime and one describes with faith the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis and Krishna's other pastimes, then one will obtain pure devotional service and the lust within one's heart will be eradicated. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. It eradicates lust within the heart. So we don't have to worry. Some parts of the Bhagavatam, they're very sexual and we become disturbed. What is this? The Bhagavatam is supposed to bring me out of material nature. But you should have faith. If you read with the right attitude, then actually you get to bypass those feelings. You know, Prabhupada said, you feel lusty, read about Krishna with the gopis and it will go away. You'll become purified. It's like you get to live it out, but you're not the center. Krishna's the center. You dovetail. So in this way, you know, we can conquer the disease, the heart disease of lust. So these are some considerations about today's purport. Today's the Panihati festival we're celebrating today. Shri Dharma Prabhu says that we will be serving chipped rice today. So I'll say a little bit about that. It's described in the Anchalila. The pastime is that it's a village, Panihati, and Lord Nityananda was there with so many associates. And then Raghunath Das Goswami appeared. And being very humble and not wanting to take any credit for himself, he offered his obeisances from a distance. And one of Lord Nityananda's associates drew Lord Nityananda's attention to this. So he called Raghunath over. But being very shy, he didn't come. So then Lord Nityananda grabbed him and he placed Raghunath's head on his feet. And he chastised him. He said, "You're a thief. You know, you're trying to get the benefit for offering obeisances without appearing before me." So he called him, "You're a thief. So your punishment is you should feed all the Vaishnavs chip rice and yogurt." Say again? Lord Nityananda saying this. Without through me, okay, thank you. So he asked him, he told him, you have to prepare a feast. So then he gathered chip rice, yogurt, he purchased various ingredients from the local shopkeepers, bananas, camphor, condensed milk, and he got so many earthen pots and he made a big festival, fed all the Vaishnavs. And it is said at that time, Lord Nityananda, through meditation, he brought Lord Chaitanya there. And then the two lords were joking and they were feeding chip rice to each other. And it's said that most devotees, they couldn't see this, but a few very fortunate ones, they could actually see that Lord Chaitanya was there and they could understand what was going on. So as I said, I used to live in Mayapur for a couple of years. You know, they celebrate this festival very nicely with the chipped rice, and they mix it with various fruits like mango or jackfruit, yogurt they do as well, and milk, so many different ways. So there's so many different types you can do. And if you go in the Prasad Hall, they see the picture in the Prasadam Hall, that's from that pastime. You can look at the, you can see in the picture there's so many pots, and they're on the bank, the Ganges. Some of the brahmanas, there wasn't enough space, so they were soaking their chip rice in the water. So that's, hope you like chip rice. Hare Krishna. Okay, we'll stop here. There's 5 minutes left for comments or questions. Hare Krishna.